You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome, HR Happy Hour. We are back for 2015. My name's Steve Bowes. I'm with Trish McFarland, of course. Trish, good morning. How are you today? Happy 2015.
Good morning. I'm happy to be back for show 198.
I am happy to be here. Thank you for reminding me. It is show 198. I had forgotten that. And I do now know it is Thursday. We're recording this on a Thursday. It's January 8th. First show of 2015, HR Happy Hour 198. We are going to call this show What HR We'll be talking about most in 2015. And this is, I'm shamelessly stealing from my own blog post, Trish, I wrote earlier in the week. Maybe you've seen it, although I've heard a rumor, Trish, you don't really read the Steve Bowes blog that frequently, but that's okay.
I do. I totally, no, what? Now, to be fair for listeners, so when you asked me about this particular post, I was like, no, I didn't read that. And then as we started talking, I'm like, oh, yes, I did read that. So I do, I read it. I think I am less attentive maybe to the titles of your posts. And I will tell you, if there is a picture of any kind of person playing basketball, I skip it. I just skip it. Ooh, so that's the ones.
That is many of them. So,
well, you could trick me. You could not put a picture of a basketball player, and then I would read them all.
I'll have a trick for you then today. Speaking of which, today's post features a picture of a football coach, not even a player.
Oh, so. I read that. And you know what? It's Jim Harbaugh, which is like one of my favorite players, too. I was a big Jim Harbaugh fan back in the day. And I'm thinking, after I read your post, I'm going to write the opposite opinion.
Yes,
because
that's good.
I disagree with people that have to wear the same thing every day. It's mundane. It's too plain. It's no character, no personality. Hate it. So maybe I'll.
Good. You should do
maybe
the
I'll do the. He's, can we do? Can we do that?
Yeah.
Let's start doing that.
We should do it, and we could do follow up. We could do a follow up show about it too, because I think this is not what we plan on talking about here on today's HR Happy Hour, but
it doesn't matter. It's our show.
Exactly.
Since it came up, it's our show.
So, well, Jim Harbaugh, right, he's famous for his uniform of his khaki pants, his Walmart khaki pants, and his black shirt, and he wears it all the time. And a couple of months ago, I had written a post for Fistful of Talent on that same idea. You know, Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, Barack Obama, they all wear the same thing day after day after day. And the reason most often attributed to folks who do that, and Harbaugh said the same thing the other day, which is why I wrote about it again, is that it just saves them time. It's one less decision to make in a busy day if you're a busy, you know, executive.
No, but okay.
Whatever. You know, so, it's just I don't want to spend 15 minutes deciding on my outfit. I'm going to wear the same thing every day, and that's out of my life. And I'm not saying
– you can't walk in and they have, like, all your khaki pants, but you can't just grab a different colored shirt. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. I think that's BS.
But the deeper thing – and that's one element of the story, or one layer of the story. The thing I had written about in the Fistful post, which I thought was interesting as well, is at that time there was a story in the news about a the Australian equivalent of the Today Show or Good Morning America, whatever it's called.
There was,
the gentleman for this is for the benefit of listeners, Trish, who do not follow the Steve Bowes blog that closely. The this gentleman had worn the same suit, literally the same suit for, I don't know, a year of presenting on TV. So he was on TV every day with the same blue suit on day after day after day. And his point was no one noticed. No viewer wrote a letter or an email, and the producers didn't care. He was, you know, a man could wear the same blue suit day after day after day, and as long as it was a nice suit and it was clean or whatever, it was not a problem. But the double standard existed where, and he did this for a purpose, his co-presenter, who was a female, had been frequently, you know, admonished or mocked or just really critiqued harshly for very superficial things about her appearance and the clothes she wore and her hairstyles and so on and so forth. And so it was just kind of bringing some attention to this kind of really unfair kind of double standard, and I guess speculating, Trish, and you can maybe comment on this, you know better than me, is does that really kind of exist in just other workplaces too, and is it kind of not fair that, that women get judged for how they look and their, what they wear and all of that kind of stuff to a degree which men don't have to worry about that?
I think that's part of it, and you're right, we should do a whole show about it, but I will tell you, I think if someone showed up to work every single day in the same outfit, I would start to wonder if that's truly just the one. And then I'd worry about, you know, HR, I mean, I'd be worried about hygiene issues, you know, all the sorts of things. Are they bathing? Are they washing their clothes? So I think it's weird when someone wears the same clothes or same, you know, has 10 of the same thing. Cause then no one knows that you have 10 of the same thing,
yeah,
you know,
right.
It's just a little bizarre. That's, to me, that's too quirky.
Yeah.
So I love Jim Harbaugh, but I may have to tweet at him or whatever and let him know I'm not cool with the same clothing thing.
Yeah,
that's a little...
I think he actually came out at one point and said, hey, I do own other clothes. This is just what I do when I'm working, and it just makes
sense. It's almost just saying, like, I'm too simple-minded to think for 2 seconds about putting on a different colored shirt.
Yeah, well, president, like, right? The president wears blue suits or gray suits, so he doesn't exactly wear the same thing every day, but... He made news, right, for sometime in the summer. He showed up to the press conference there at the White House, and he had a khaki suit on, like a summery kind of light-colored khaki suit on. And no one wanted to ask him questions about what was going on in the world and the economy or, you know, terrorism. It was like, whoa, what's with the khaki suit? It was such a jarring kind of a change for him. I even noticed this myself, Trish. Once I started wearing nicer clothes, that's all anybody wanted to talk to me about. When I was out and about, that happened to me.
But that
too.
Shows you that there was an issue beforehand, right? People were thinking like, "Oh, they're disheveled or what?" I'm sorry. Again, I'm not up on the White House or what goes on there, but I mean, really, Barack Obama doesn't have some sort of stylist that's purchasing these suits for him, and they can't change it up and throw a blue shirt in instead of a white one every now. I mean, yeah, really? A different color tie? Really? His wife? I mean, I'm sorry. Wives across America help their husbands get dressed. And be like, oh, should I wear the blue tie today or the yellow? Wear the yellow one, honey. Really? Like, so there's, I don't know. Yeah, you can tell. I'm not a fan.
All right. Well, we know where you stand on the wear the same same thing to work every day.
Let's just make this show about that because clearly we've gone off.
Sure. I know. We're 6.5 minutes in. We haven't talked about anything. But hey, that's all right. That's fine. We can. I think I said this the last time we did the show. I prefer this. I'm ready to go almost into a guestless world. We have some guests coming up actually in the next couple of weeks.
We do.
I don't want to tell people, oh, the happy hour show is only just you and me talking. Although I think it's fun. Yeah, we do have some good guests coming up. We've got Howard Tarnoff from Ceridians coming on soon. Mark Newman from Higher Views coming on soon. Parker Conrad from Zenefits is coming on soon, and there's one more I know we have. It doesn't matter. So we do have a lot of really fun shows coming up in the next few weeks and months. So in addition to just our nonsense here. So this is great to be here, though, on the first show of 2015. And like I said, I wrote this post earlier in the week, Trish, this What HR Will Be Talking About Most in 2015 post. And it's probably been based on just shares and clicks and page views. And this is not saying much, and it's all relative. So I'm not trying to brag or anything, because I'm not. But it's probably the most popular thing I've written in 3 years. I was shocked. And I wrote it, quickly, like everything I write.
Those are the best posts.
Yeah, over the weekend.
They really are.
So I've been surprised about how much interest there was in this. And so I thought real quick on the show today, I'll run through a couple of things I had on here and we can just talk about them. Or you can tell me where I'm wrong. So I came up with three things, right? Three subjects that I said HR will be talking about most in 2015. So the first one, and these are not earth-shattering, and I'm not the only one by any stretch who came up with these ideas, believe me. So the first one I said was predictive analytics. Because I feel like that's going to dominate certainly the HR tech discussion in 2015, if not the general HR discussion. And based on what happened last year at HR tech and what many of the larger HR tech companies are working on and just this general trend to push more and more quantifiable and data-informed decisions into talent and HR practices. I think predictive analytics is going to be one of the hottest topics of the year. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, Trish.
Well, I do. It's interesting because I didn't really do sort of a predictions. I made some observations for the coming year myself. And I thought that in terms of what HR leaders would be doing, it would be more about the availability of usable data. Mm-hmm. So I think that really ties in with the predictive analytics piece, though, and just the data analytics in general. So I do feel like over the last few years, we have seen HR departments and HR leaders becoming much more astute when it comes to understanding what data they do have at their hands, how that data can be fit together, how they can extract that data, and then how to use that data. And so, yes, predictive is just the next step in that. So, yeah, I think there's, you know, probably a continuum of where people fall on comfort level and being able to do that. But if the technology vendors are certainly making that an available option that makes it easy for HR teams to start actually using predictive analytics, I think they're going to be all over it,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
it's very helpful.
Yeah, and I do too. The downside, and I don't think I wrote about this in the post, but if I think about it, I think the downside or the negative on this is, like, I feel we could be pushing the ball a little bit past the goal, like, already. Or what's the expression I'm thinking? Oh, no, getting out over the skis too much. That's the right expression, because here's why. It seems like only 3 years ago, right, we talked about big data constantly. Big data, big right. data, data, big data, big data. And then we kind of moved that discussion into analytics. Well, it went to metrics, and then it went to analytics, and then we talked mm-hmm. for a while about analytics. And now we're talking about predictive analytics, because sort of regular analytics, well, they're not good enough anymore. Now it's predictive. And I feel like there's probably lots of organizations and lots of HR folks who haven't even really gotten started or really gotten very far with the 3 year ago trend, and now I've got to worry about predictive, right? Like, and so sometimes I think, you know, me too, and I'm guilty of this too. We see something really cool or a new piece of technology or a new gadget or a new wearable or whatever it is, and we start to think, wow, that's the next big thing, without really realizing, hey, that's not the next big thing at all. That's the next, you know, that's a niche thing that maybe, you know, the 1% of the 1% is going to be able to do something with right today, while the rest of the world is still here, right, and still at this other place. So that's my, I guess, my warning on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that we kind of hit on this the last show we did, where we were talking about, though, I mean, these things take so long to be adapted, you know, in a widespread manner, though. So yeah. I think it's fine. I think it's fine, and I understand your point of that these things are, that the terms are changing rapidly every 2 or 3 years or whatnot, but yeah, I think the adoption of it is much slower. So, you know, but I think you're right. I think predictive analytics is going to be on the lips of many HR leaders this year. So good call on that one.
All right. So that was one. Second one, let's go to my second one. An easy no-brainer, and everybody's realized this. I said retention. And retention, particularly of, you know, highly skilled or highly sought after, or more importantly, difficult to replace kinds of people. And so I write it on the blog, Trish. You're familiar with the Steve Bose blog. You might get it
a little bit.
You might see it in your feed reader once in a while. It's, I run a lot of data post chart of the day series, I call it. Mm-hmm. And I was looking back on some of them from last year, and I wrote about, like, the labor market a ton last year, and particularly about the tightening of the labor market. And it doesn't take a genius to know that at the macro level, unemployment's been trending down. It's been trending down for 3 years now. There are pockets of the country, and certainly amongst certain skills, where it's becoming, and we're not going to argue about skills gap, not skills gap right now, but it's becoming exceedingly difficult for organizations to fill roles in a timely manner, and that a certain level of candidate or a certain quality of candidate or a candidate with a certain number of skills, or not just a candidate, but an existing employee, certainly, has gotten way more power than ever before. The quit rate I've written about on my blog a few times, the percentage of people who are voluntarily leaving their job every month mm-hmm. has been going up constantly. It's been going up it's at its pre-recession level, if not even exceeding it. So basically, throw all those things into the blender and mix them up, and it just says retaining people, finding good people is going to probably be the number one thing on a lot of HR people's minds in 2015. That was number two.
Steve Bose, I'm wondering if you read my blog post first and then wrote yours.
I do read the blog.
You're really just changing the language a little bit of what I wrote. So my other one was upskilling for retention. Now, my take on it was just a little bit different. Obviously, believe in all that you just said, but I'm sort of taking it from the angle of the reason maybe that you're seeing sort of this uptick in the voluntary turnover is because employees are starting to upskill themselves. Okay. So if you're not providing training, because, you know, when times get tough, training dollars get cut back across the board. And I think we're starting to see with many free resources like Khan Academy or MIT offers a lot of their courses, you know, after they, you don't get credit for it, obviously, but you can do their courses for free on a variety of topics. People are going on YouTube to get trained. So I think you're starting to see people empowering themselves and upskilling. And I guess my point is for 2015 is if HR leaders don't embrace this internally and start upskilling, maybe even using some of these resources, mm-hmm. your existing staff, you're not going to retain them. Because it's more than just training, you know, it's more than just training John Doe to do this specific job. It's you really have to upskill to figure out, maybe it's a lateral move, maybe it is a promotion, maybe it's moving them to a completely different department. And I think that's where we see people who are getting bored in their positions and then they'll leave. So yeah. That's just one example of how an HR leader could think creatively maybe to help with the retention issue they haven't approached in the past.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think for lots of folks, and the time you can spend doing any sort of one thing or one general thing, one role, there's a shelf life for that. Other than, say, I'm not talking about, you know, baseball player or, you know, CEO, things like that. But talk about regular jobs that most people have. It might be 3 years, it might be four, right? It's probably in that neighborhood when, you know, you hit that 3-year mark and, you know, you've more or less figured it all out. You've gotten about as much out of it as you can, and you're kind of interested in some other things. And here's the thing. We're sort of like, and I time that also because we're about 3 to 4 years now outside of sort of post-recession, right? I mean, right. It feels like it's a little longer, but, the recession technically probably ended earlier than that, but it didn't really end. And for a lot of folks will tell you today, oh, we're still kind of in an economic, not a recession, but certainly not in a thriving economy, certainly in some parts of the country. But, you know, we're at that window, right? You know, so things started to really noticeably improve in a macro sense in probably 2012. 2013 was a decent year. 2014 was a really strong year in many sectors of the economy. Look at the stock market's not really a great proxy for the economy in general, but look at the stock market in the last 2 years. You know, remarkable, right? So
right.
We're at that point, though. It's 3 years in, 3 years into the recovery, more and more people feeling confident in that. The recovery's kind of set in. Maybe they've, like you said, Trish, they've used this opportunity to get better themselves and now are ready to do something else. And this is just exactly the time where, you know, talent's going to be scarcer and harder to find. So the next one I have is branding, marketing, and attraction, Trish. I said the whole HR is marketing, which we have been talking about a lot. I said that was going to continue in 2015, this idea of selling the company to candidates. And as you said, just selling the company to people who are internal in the organization and are already in the organization to keep them in place. The whole marketing the company as a method to continue to build your talent base. I had branding, marketing, talent attraction in one big lump.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, you're right. We've been talking about candidate experience for years now. I think you honed in on it at the very end, though. It's going to be about how do you continue to keep your existing employees as well. That's where some companies are falling down. They're not really keeping the communication going. And when people feel like they don't know what's going on, they will fill that in with their own thoughts and ideas, which are often not accurate.
Yeah.
And then that gets people riled up, and then that makes people leave. So I think it will definitely be much more.
Hey, and we're back after a little quick break there in midstream while we
I like commercial breaks. That is good.
In fact, if you're listening to the show, your ad could appear right there. Your commercial message, your sponsorship message could have been running right during that break. So welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes, Trish McFarland. Hello. Hello again.
Hello. Hello again.
This is HR Happy Hour 198. We are talking about things HR will be talking about in 2015 and some of the things maybe HR needs to stop talking about in 2015. And this is probably why I think this article I wrote, this post I wrote, got so many tweets, because people don't really care about the first set of things like branding, right, and marketing and retention. Those are kind of obvious and analytics. The things I said we should stop talking about, I think, get people riled up, because people love talking about these things, the three things I picked. The first one, right, I picked is we'll hit them real quick for a few minutes. The first one I said we need to stop talking about is quote-unquote social HR. I am sick of this, Trish. And by this I mean this idea, oh, get people engaged in social media, HR needs to have an active voice, HR pros need to be on Twitter. And my whole point is this, Trish, it's 2015, for God's sakes. Twitter has been a thing for about 7 or 8 years now, right? So if you haven't figured out if it's for you, right, if there's some value there, either personally or professionally, you're never going to figure it out. And the answer actually is there's none, right? So, you know, and I don't think we're hitting this too much anymore, but I just, every so often I'll see, oh, you know, let's get HR engaged. Let's have a tweet chat. Let's do this or that. And I'm just like, enough already with this. I think we're done. In fact, the really well-known VC, venture capital guy, Fred Wilson, I don't know if you follow him at all, Trish, he writes a really interesting blog. He said in his sort of observations of the year end and into the new year that, which was really an interesting take, which is the era of the social networking era of the internet is over. That phase is over, and it's declining. And what's replacing it, in his opinion, and I sort of buy into this quite a bit, is things like Snapchat, things like Cyberdust, which I kind of like. I've been experimenting with more ephemeral. Ephemeral.
I was like, what are we talking about?
Ephemeral messaging, one-to-one messaging, disappearing messaging. I don't have to start talking about the Sony hack, but, you know, that I don't know, just this we're moving past it, right? Like, kids don't like to use Facebook. They like to use Instagram and Snapchat and other things, right? And so, I don't know. That's my whole take. I'm sick of the topic. I'm sick of the word. I'm sick of the phrase. We need to stop talking about it.
I don't disagree, but I wonder, though, if we're definitely in the minority, because I think for people who are early adopters, and the type of person who becomes an early adopter of many things, we're very excited. We see something new. We want to try it, get involved. We figure out how to use it, whether it's for personal, for business, and then we're ready for the next thing. So is it that the group of people who got you threw out Twitter, is it because it's old news to us? We've been doing this for, like you said, 7 years. We're ready for something new. Some of the things you just mentioned are things that most people will never use. Most people, if I go up to someone on the street, if they've even heard of Snapchat, I bet they think it's only used for, you know, sexual things or inappropriate things or whatever. You know, so I don't know. I agree with you personally. I'm tired of the whole idea of, yeah, HR needs to get on board for social, because, you know, we were doing this back in 2007, 2008, 2009. It's funny. I did, oddly, like, we didn't coordinate this, but I wrote about this in my most recent post on Ringleader, in terms of what makes technology or applications sticky.
Oh, yes, I did read that.
And part of it was I mentioned Twitter, because I said back then I wanted to teach everybody Twitter for business. That was, I was my goal. If I went to an event, I wanted to share it with the world. And then I kind of got to where it was like, you know what? If you haven't gotten it by now, I really don't want to teach you.
Right.
I want to take advantage of knowing it, and you all can fend for yourself. I wonder, is that a little bit of why we're tired of hearing about it too? Because, like, we're not here to teach everybody Twitter.
Yeah.
We're here to teach everybody social. If you haven't figured it out by now, to your point, you've kind of missed the boat. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I always get a little bit surprised. I do kind of keep an eye. I still use Twitter. Don't get me wrong. I use it, I don't tweet that much other than sort of just posting articles and the things I write and the blog and the shows. So I'm bad about sort of engaging with people. I sort of try, but I don't really try anymore. But I am kind of surprised every so often when I get people following me, you know, brand new people following me, and it's like, oh, HR professional for 25 years, you know, and, you know, they've just gotten on board, you know, with it. I'm like, wow. Like, yeah. Where have you been? But and it's not. Look, we're, this is an HR podcast. We're talking about HR. This is not limited to HR people by any stretch, right? So I don't. I'm not trying to single out HR people as not being hip or cool, because I don't believe that's true. But I think there's hip and cool people and unhip and uncool people in every profession. But the
well, I just think we need to be a little more patient, though, too, because if there are people who've been in whatever profession for 25 years and they're just now getting on, that's why it's important to stay active, at least somewhat, because you'll miss those relationships. And when I think back to, you know, Twitter is still my thing of choice, but a lot of the people that I met there have now shifted to having the discussions on Facebook, which is fine. I'll give you an example. Like, I think it was two Sundays ago, I was just thinking about some employee engagement things, why on a Sunday morning early I was, and I put it out there. I have like almost 100 comments on Facebook on a Sunday morning about employee engagement.
You need friends, Trish, with more like, to do in their lives, I think, is the lesson
but
there.
But see, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, that whole conversation would have happened on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So I think what it is it doesn't so much matter the form of media you're using, but people do want to talk about HR. People do want to talk about making things better. And they do want to use social to do it. But you're right. It's probably shifting into what format the conversation is going to happen in. And so that's hard, though. If you're someone who has not been on board so far,
yeah.
Boy, I don't know where do you tell them to even start?
I don't know.
You know, right. I don't know.
I think you're right, Trish. I think you sort of explained what I wrote better than the way I wrote it, because that's probably exactly what I was thinking, right? And I just probably was a little bit inarticulate in writing it. But so I'm glad. That's why I wanted to do this podcast anyway, right? To sort of flesh out some of these things a little bit further than in, you know, I spent, you know, 65 words on this in the blog post. So, all right. So since you brought up employee engagement, Trish, I'm dropping down to number three. Engagement was number three on my list of things
we need
to stop talking about in 2015. And I'm going to read a little bit of what I wrote just to set some context for folks who didn't read the blog. I said, only 30% of employees are engaged. That has become an immutable truth of work and workplaces. It is right alongside average annual salary increases will be 3% this year as the most expected headline of the year in HR. So maybe it's time to just accept it. Lots of people are not engaged and probably never will be no matter what. Quit worrying about it. Worry about if they show up, if they get their jobs done, they don't leak the company intranet to the North Koreans, and they don't microwave leftover fish in the lunchroom. We have collectively spent ages of time, effort, and energy trying to quote-unquote fix engagement, and we have so far failed. Maybe it's time to take a year off. That's end quote from Steve. That's Steve right there. That's good stuff, Trish. That's 175 retweets right there. So that's what I said.
All right. So I definitely disagree on employee engagement being something we have to stop talking about. I think we're getting hung up on how it's been handled in the last 15 years, because from that perspective, I completely agree. When you're just talking about serving employees, getting some results back, and never doing anything with those results, totally agree. That part of employee engagement has to go. I also think people get hung up on the word engagement. There's a lot out there. You could probably Google it. What does engagement really mean? Is that the word? Is it commitment? Is it, you know, this goes on and on. But the idea of understanding what will make people want to be with your company is very relevant. And I think that there's lots of excitement around both vendors who are doing some cool things to be able to encourage collaboration. For example, 15 years ago when we started measuring engagement, collaboration was not something that was really pushed or promoted or seen as a good thing. Giving people time to truly have an opportunity to think creatively in the workplace is I'm just now starting to see employees getting dedicated time to think, because so much of our jobs, it doesn't matter what job you're in, it's all reaction, right? We're all putting out fires, we're answering emails. That's what work has become. So I think this can go, and this will be a whole nother show, but I think it's more about the future of work. What is work going to look like, and how will work come at you is what will engage employees. So I don't think we're going to get rid of employee engagement. We're just not going to talk about it or measure it in the same way that we've been doing. One of the things I was going back to, it's actually coincidentally a post that I just posted today over on the Brandon Hall Group blog over at brandonhall.com. we had done a larger survey on employee engagement. Madeline Lorano did an excellent job, and I've got a lot of data in there from her survey, and she's written several posts about it that are well worth the read on employee engagement in terms of how it pays off directly and impacts the bottom line.
Okay.
So that companies that actually do still prioritize around employee engagement tend to have much reduced turnover, which you and I said is still a very important thing. What I was doing was I did just a little tiny, like I'll call it a pulse survey, again, on Facebook, very informal, specifically around compliments.
Okay.
And how doing something, again, we don't think of that as being a big deal, but having people do something that costs nothing, not just complimenting your subordinates, but your peers, and upward compliments. Have you ever given your boss a compliment? On a regular
basis?
Have
I ever done that? I probably have, like, but see, my day, we call that sucking up a little bit.
Well, maybe it is sucking up. But does it? All right.
No, I get your point. I'm trying to be funny.
Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but I think that employee engagement is still relevant. It's just going to be thinking about it in a different way in terms of the future of work. What is engagement really going to be? I don't know. So I think there's going to be a lot more talk about that. Like I said, that was one of those topics I threw out on Facebook on a Sunday morning, got almost 100 really thoughtful comments. I'm talking about where people went and pulled research and posts and all sorts of stuff and threw it in.
Right. I'll say it again, Trish. What are these people doing on Sunday on Facebook worrying about this stuff? I'm asking seriously.
These are the HR thought leaders, right, of the industry.
God.
I swear.
Give it a rest. I feel like... I get it, but I don't.
You know what you were doing? Instead, this post.
I was writing, probably.
On a Sunday morning, you're writing about how employee engagement is not important and missing the whole conversation on why it is important.
See, somebody asked me about, like, why do you post so much?
You would be more social.
I said, well, how do you post so much? And I didn't invent this comment, but it's true. I said, well, it's because I spend more time writing than, you know, most people spend not writing or whatever the line is. But all right, I'm being a wise guy.
One more thing, I'm going to be a wise guy. Do you think that clearly you were having ideas about employee engagement on a Sunday when the rest of us were talking about it? Do you think it's because you're more introverted and you're not out there having these social discussions about some of the HR topics?
Possibly. I would say, like, I mean, this gets into sort of how people like to use these platforms. I don't like to use, or I prefer not to use them, particularly Facebook, which I don't really use much at all. But I especially don't want to use it for quote unquote work. To me, you know, and I'll put Instagram into that bucket as well. I really actually like, you know, the funny thing is I never post anything on Facebook ever, other than my blog goes out there. Like I don't even really comment anymore. I basically have almost left it. But I post a fair bit of stuff on Instagram, which I kind of like. I looked at my Instagram the other day. I've posted 400 pictures on Instagram. And I've only been on Instagram a couple of years probably. So that's actually quite a lot, right? That's a lot of posting, right? And so on that regard, I'm comfortable there. And to me, that's where I prefer to have like a social kind of an interaction. For like work and business and these types of interactions that you're describing and we're talking about on the show, to me, I feel like I've got so many outlets for that now. I've got my blog. I've got what I write on human resources.
But that's not interaction.
Well, no, but my point is, like, I've got all these outlets now on my blog, HRE. I've got Twitter to a little bit of extent. We do this podcast, you know, a couple times a month. Like, and so for me, yeah, it's not these platforms are not as interactive, but like I feel like I've put so much of my ideas, my thoughts, my commentary out there in the world, whether it's in all these places, and like I feel like here's what I really feel like, I guess the world doesn't need any more of it. Like I don't like I just don't. In fact, I'm already worried about being overdone out there. You know what I mean? Like I've done so much stuff and continue to do so much stuff. There are many times where I think, well, Jesus Christ, does the world really need to hear what I think about this? You know, like, especially.
I think they do though.
Anyway, that's.
I know we're getting a little off topic, but not to play armchair psychologist here, but I think it's an interesting observation that you had these thoughts and you're putting it out into a format where, sure, people can comment, but it's not a back and forth. It's not an interaction.
Oh, yeah, this post,
right?
I keep talking
it's
about.
It's you putting your thoughts into the world.
111 right. tweets and something like 107 LinkedIn shares, right? Which for me is a lot. Right. Again, it's all relative. For me, that's a right. lot. Has zero comments. Not a single comment on the post. Not one.
Right. but honestly, if I think of that thread on Facebook, again, Facebook's not my choice. That's where people have gravitated, though. But doesn't matter where that conversation was had. We then moved it. There was so much and so much interest. We moved it into an Evernote ongoing chat about employee engagement. Your one paragraph could have very easily been like, I could have cut and pasted that and said, here's what Steve Bose thinks. That would have caused a whole nother thing. The fact that we would have had a detractor would have been amazing. And yeah. it might have led even more discussion. So I sort of
actually,
feel like
yeah, that's actually
you need to you need my challenge for you for 2015 is to insert yourself a little bit into those kinds of interactions, because being the detractor sometimes is going to be what really sparks that next wave of thinking about something like employee engagement.
Yeah, that's interesting kind of a thing. You know, like I said, I don't see myself, Trish, debating with people on Facebook about work stuff ever. I just don't really.
On Evernote, and you use Evernote now.
Yeah, I do. All right, fair point. So anyway, I'm sick of it. And really what I kind of said is maybe we should take a pause on it and worry about other things too, particularly when dozens of years of trying haven't really moved the needle. So good discussion, good debate, apparently a better debate happening in other places that I'm not aware of, but fair enough. So let's get to the last one before we run out of time,
okay.
Trish. My last one, and I know people will hate on this. I'm with Tim Sackett on this a little bit too. He's been out there on this, is candidate experience. Like, I'm tired of it, and I get it. I love the candidate experience people. I love the attention that Jerry Crispin and Elaine Orler have brought to this issue. I love what they've done. It's been interesting. I think it's been valuable. I think everything that could possibly be said about this has been said. I think that treating candidates respectfully, professionally, keeping them up to date on the status of their applications are just basic HR functions that I think, for the most part, anybody can do if they wanted to do, any organization could do if they wanted to do. Everybody should be doing this. I totally agree. I think going above and beyond ensuring those basics, for the typical organization is probably not worth it, or probably wouldn't be what would be a priority item on the list of all the other talent and people related things that they could do. That's it. So I think we've gone over the top on this. It's sort of like, you know, Hollywood had the Oscars, which were cool. And then they had the, you know, maybe the Golden Globes. Okay, fairly cool. Now there's 17 other award shows that sort of award the same people for the same movies doing the same thing. We didn't need any of those other things. I sort of feel like that way with candidate experience. Like we've said all there is to say about it. Going past it, you know, where those basics is probably not worth it and probably needs to go away.
Do you think it's because it's a success? Is that really what's going on?
I think.
Do you feel like it's been done so well and publicized so much that we've succeeded in having better candidate experience, and that's why it needs to go?
I don't think so. I think we've succeeded in raising the issue and bringing attention to the issue and describing the ways in which it can be improved. I think it's so simple of a concept that continuing to talk about it is just, we're saying the same things over and over and over again.
I don't disagree. Well, like I said earlier, we kind of touched on it. I said, I think this year might be more focusing on internal communications, having that same mindset about, because a lot of people have said, well, what about employee experience, for example? Another one I heard when I was, when I went over to True London this year, which was kind of an interesting spin on it, was what about the recruiter experience?
Mm. That's a good one.
And I hadn't heard that before. And so I'd like to, I hope people start talking about that a little bit more. I mean, it's one thing to make sure that your recruiter is giving your candidate a good experience. What about the flip side? Who really cares about what kind of an experience recruiters are having? I mean, some of them are in really stressful positions and, you know, and again, but it goes back to a recruiter in my mind is, I'm going to say in terms of like being an employee, whether that's a true, you know, employee of your company or someone that your company is hiring and contracting with. I'll use it in that sense of the word. But are you giving your recruiting team the right experience themselves to make them want to go out and be the cheerleaders to these kids.
Maybe that's
an interesting spin.
It is, and I think that's MIPS perhaps is the evolution of this, and maybe people are talking about this already and working on it. I don't know. Like, I can't profess to be the expert.
They are. They're all on Facebook.
So where do people like post pictures of their cats and their kids? If employee engagement and candidate experience and what do people? Is it all on Instagram? I don't follow a lot of people on Instagram, so maybe
Instagram. I think Instagram's turned into the pictures, or you know, yeah.
Facebook is for like I never mind. I don't want to get.
I know. It's crazy.
What's with you people? I miss Google Wave. Like that's where
I miss Google Wave. Don't even.
We should have talked about doing that there. Maybe we could bring it back. So
back the wave. I need a T-shirt. Bring back the wave.
I love the wave. So that's my three things, Trish, to stop talking about in 2015. Social HR, candidate experience, and employee engagement. Those were my three. Do you have anything else you want to, before we wrap it up, that you said we should stop talking about in 2015?
I'm going to say it, and I don't even want to talk about it. How about that?
Okay.
I do not care to hear any more about talent communities. I know they're there. There are a few that are successful. That's phenomenal. I don't want to hear anymore because I think it's much like candidate experience. It's been overdone.
Yeah.
So. It's in the, you know, it's built into systems now. It's there. People can be aware of it. They can use it. I don't need to hear, 20 more sessions this year about.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm going to keep that in mind as I program HR Tech, Trish, for the fall.
There'll be what? Can we do a talent communities track?
There'll be no talent communities content at the show. Believe
me. How about you and I? Let's do a session on talent communities.
Oh, please. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that either.
Can we do a session on all these things we just want to get rid of?
Yeah, we could. We really could. See? You know, I got a couple of really crazy ideas
get
for tech.
People riled up.
I don't want to know if I want to share them publicly just yet, but got a couple of interesting things going on. All right, so that was it. That was the what we're going to be talking about in 2015 and what we need to stop talking about in 2015 with a bonus not to talk about in 2015 on talent communities.
Right.
Hey, this was fun. What we should, and every time we do the show, I'm going to listen back to the show because I've got to edit it all back together now, is every time we say, oh, we should do another show about this. Oh, we need to do a whole show about this. I'm going to actually write.
Oh, my gosh. Write it down. We could be talking like every other day.
I'm going to write those things down, and we'll get those schedules. Oh, this was fun. Great to be back. We're closing in on show number 200 too soon, so I'm excited about that. Anything else we want to mention before we sign it off for the first show of 2015, Trish? Anything you want to mention?
Yes. I want to mention the Brandon Hall. If you go to brandonhall.com, our HCM Excellence Conference is coming up at the end of January, January 28th through 30th. You can still register. You actually will be there with me, with Mike Sinka and Edward Pertwee doing a great session on data and analytics and predictive analytics.
Predictive, so, exactly, which I know. I told you we'd be talking about that in 2015. Yeah. I was right.
No, seriously, it's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We would love to have people come join us. And, just go to brandonhall.com for that.
Cool. Awesome. And for me, just hrtechconference.com. The call for speakers is still open. Click on the little speaker tab on the top of the page and submit your speaking proposal. Get it in there in the next couple of weeks, please, because I'm going to start reviewing those really soon. And, of course, HR Happy Hour, Trish. For folks who are listening, follow us on Blog Talk Radio, /Steve-Bose, hrhappyhour.net, which is the show website home, which is soon to be made over, and subscribe on iTunes, or on Android devices. I use Stitcher Radio, but there's lots of other podcast apps, Overcast or Podcast Addict. We're on all of them. You just need to search for HR Happy Hour. Find the show, add it to your favorites, subscribe, never miss an episode, download it right to your device. And we'd love to hear from you too. Trish, we do have, I made sure this is back up and running, hrhappyhour@gmail.com. That's the show email address as well. So email us if you have any comments, thoughts, ideas, questions, or you want to be on the show. So I guess that's it. I think we're out. And thanks, Trish. And I hope you have
catch you next time.
A great rest of the day. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.